Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Real Talk. It's Lucas here, and I hope that today's episode informs and inspires you to have your own real conversations. As always, today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Trivan, maker of trucks, trailers, and enclosure buildings tailored to your needs. Be sure to check them out at trivan.com. A huge thanks to them for sponsoring the show and making it possible. One other quick note before we get into today's episode is that if you are willing and able, if you could leave a review, preferably a five-star one, on any of the podcast networks or platforms that allow for it, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts, that will be much appreciated as it helps get the word out there and lets people know what we're all about. So, with that in mind, on to the episode. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Real Talk Podcast. Today, I have the privilege of talking to Paul Vanderclay, Reverend Paul Vanderclay, the CRC pastor from out of, what's it, Living Stones in California?
Yeah.
Probably most known for his YouTube channel, up here in Canada, at least. And yeah, I just get to have a privilege to chat with Paul about some of the conservative characters that we see in the world today and some of the influences that they've had in our thinking and stuff like that in the church. And Paul's obviously covered a lot of these people on his channel. So yeah, it should be an exciting conversation. So welcome, Paul.
It's great.
Appreciate you coming on and chatting. You look very much like you do on YouTube. So
I'm sitting exactly where I sit when I make YouTube videos.
So you're very comfortable behind the mic too. So that's refreshing for a podcast host too.
I've gotten used to it.
Yes. Yeah, so how did you get into the podcast or the YouTube world and why did you start that as part of your ministry?
Well, the podcasting was secondary. I was playing around on YouTube first. So I had blogged for a number of years, similar to what I'd done on the channel. I'd been reading Rod Dreher, and I was kind of impressed with how he was using blogging in terms of he'd always have read the whole thing, and he'd always sort of point me to interesting things, and then I'd go find other things. So I'd blogged for years, blogged sermon drafts and things like that. And then people would sometimes say, oh, you should write a book. And it's And I have some colleagues who are writing books sometimes, which usually their sermon series. And I thought, if I wrote a book, my mother would buy it. Would she read it? Probably. People in the church would buy a few copies. Would they read it? Maybe. But people don't, you know, a little before we started recording, there's a lot of print material out there that my sense was a lot of people just don't read. They watch television, they watch Netflix, they watch this, they watch that. So I was already sort of keyed into the fact that video is probably more of a mass medium than print. So I had toyed around with it a little bit. I had done, there was a CRC Synod, I think it was 2016 or 17, or 2016, I'd done sort of a post-game show, the CRC Synod that year. And then a member of my church wanted me to go down to public access TV with him, and I wasn't about to do that. So we started the Freddie and Paul show. So we had done that for a while on YouTube. And then I saw the stuff going on around Jordan Peterson, and I thought, you know, I wanted to find some people to talk about, to kind of process that over. And most of the CRC clergy and people in my circles didn't have a lot of interest in it. Usually they were older people than me. They weren't about to watch videos. And so then I was also rereading Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death. And I thought, there's also something about the medium here. So I thought, I'll make a YouTube video. I mean, what could go wrong? And I thought, you know, maybe, you know, the three or four people were watching the Freddie and Paul show. I thought maybe a dozen or so would watch my thinking about what Jordan Peterson was doing. And I'd have a few new friends. That's pretty much what I thought would happen. Yep. And I didn't understand then. The next morning after I'd published this video, I opened my email. At that point, every time I got a new subscriber, Google would send me an email. Oh, yeah. And I woke up and my inbox was just flooded. I'm like, what is going on? And and then I told my wife and my son who were home, and my son picks up his smartphone and looks at the channel. He's just watching subscriber after subscriber. And he's like, so I thought, and then I started getting emails from real people who had watched the, video and wanted to talk. And that's what really hooked me, because, you know, making a YouTube video, that's just sort of something a pastor of a dying church does in his spare time because he wants to do fruitful things. But then suddenly when real life people want to talk about, and most of them were atheists, they wanted to talk about what on earth was going on. Well, how can I say no to this? So right. That's sort of what kept the channel going and sort of propelled it. So the YouTube algorithm would put it in front. Most people, even people that eventually subscribed, most people saw, well, here's some guy with a crazy beard wanting to talk about Jordan Peterson. He's a minister. I don't want to watch that. But some people did. And that then gained momentum. We started doing meetups here at church, people who wanted to talk about it. And it just kept growing. And then I continued. So then I started having some of these conversations online, and that got more people interested in it. And then I just kept making videos in terms of things that I thought were interesting or important that I wanted to think out loud about. And people would think out loud along with me in the comment section. And then we started a Discord server, and it's just continued to go since then.
Wow.
So that's how this thing got going.
How many years ago was that? You said
that was 6 years. 16, it was 70?
Wow.
The video that sort of launched it was November of 2017.
Okay. Wow. That's So yeah, once you get down a road doing anything for that long, you get quite a following. But yeah, you've got like the engagement on your videos is quite substantial. So it's and yeah, it's not like you're putting out one every other week either, like we do with a podcast. I think you're putting out like several a day sometimes. So
yeah, sometimes.
Is that part of your ministry then? Like,
it has become a part of my ministry, surely. And the church began to recognize that too. Visitors started coming in, and, you know, we're kind of a small dying church, and a visitor comes in, everybody's, whoops. And then they, well, who are you? Why'd you call? I saw Paul on YouTube. And you hear that 100 times, and it's kind of like, oh. And then people started donating money to the church because I was doing this on YouTube, and then they really pay attention. And
wow.
So that's gone on quite a bit. So the church has really embraced it as this is an important part of their ministry as well. And so we just take it one day at a time.
Man, that's crazy. So what are your, do you have goals with it? Or
no, not really.
Just kind of do what interests you. And yeah,
for the most part, I don't really have a plan. The thing that I do care about people. And the thing that I see is that people live isolated lives. And a lot of people who watch too much YouTube could really stand to have a few friends. And so what's most gratifying for me is watching people. So we took these meetups, we were helping start meetups in different places. And then when Jordan Peterson was sick and sort of disappeared, we pivoted that and started what I call Estuary, which is just spaces for people to have meaningful, important conversations in their lives. And that's quite important to me, because I think the church needs it. And I think people need it. And I think actually, if churches do this more, they will have more and better contact with their community than churches just sort of running all the usual church programs.
Right. Yeah. So is that kind of the goal, is to drive kind of interaction to groups, like smaller groups, discussion groups, getting people together? Because you must have, obviously you have a reach that's beyond, like, you don't even know where everyone's living.
Yeah.
And then like
goal would be too strong.
Yeah. Okay. Fair.
I do these, I call them monologue videos or commentary videos, because I find something that's interesting and I want to process it. So that's those videos. The conversation videos with people, it's because people are interesting and you meet really interesting people out there. So that's fun. And I mean, that's most of the channel, those two things. And then my rough drafts for Sunday, I got to preach a sermon anyway. So when this thing started, even when I was blogging, I always tried to figure out how I could always kill two birds with one stone. So getting ready for the sermon, well, I can blog and I get a blog post out of it and I get a sermon out of it. And so then when the video started, it's like, I should probably kind of run through the state of my sermon right now. And then after you make it, you get some new ideas and you can continue. I usually make those on Friday, churn throughout the weekend, and then you have the Sunday sermon. So, and right. then estuary. So a lot of it's just sort of grown. And this frustrates a lot of people. A lot of people are like, well, where is this going? And I say, I don't know. And then they're upset with me because you're supposed, if you don't like it, just watch something else. I mean, I don't do it for a living. And so I've never told people, you know, besides my general goals as a Christian minister, which is making disciples of Jesus and loving, you know, loving God and loving your neighbor, those are my goals. I don't feel like I'd need any other ones.
Yeah, that's fair. It's hard to know what opportunities you're going to get, right? And yeah, if you don't know, you go into something like this without any inclination that it can become something where thousands of people are watching you. So, but yeah, I'll tell you, like, for going through your channel, I was just trying to find some of the more unique things you've done. I mean, you've done debate style stuff with people, like conference style, kind of round table discussions. I mean, you've talked to some pretty cool people. You've talked to Peterson, which I actually had a hard time finding on your channel somehow. I feel like that would be like the first thing that you got on your, like, if I talked to Peterson, I'd be like, I talked to Peterson. but even the, your rando sessions where you talk to random people, I find them, like, whenever I clicked one, I've found it like most of them are such good conversations. I can't turn them off. So it's,
I mean, obviously, they're some of my favorite parts of the channel.
Oh, they're so fun. I mean, like, yeah. And I never intended to listen to them because I'm like, okay, I need to find something, some kind of good nugget here, but they're so interesting that, yeah. And I guess part of that's just that we're looking for people to have conversations with and ideas to think about. So, partly why we do this podcast too, but it's, I mean, I would encourage anyone to go listen to your podcast or like look at your channel. Do you mostly focus on YouTube I know you're on Twitter too, or X.
Well, there is an audio version of the podcast. So when I started it, because it's predominantly audio, I mean, right. I don't do a lot in terms of the visuals. So then a lot of people are like, well, do you have an audio version? So there's a Podbean that you can find on Apple Podcasts. And I mean, so there is an audio only version and some of the real hardcore people. So that's about the hardcore people. That's about 1,000-1,500 people that listen to the podcast regularly. But the YouTube goes up and down much more. YouTube is really a discovery engine. If you're just doing a podcast, it's hard to get discovered. But YouTube sort of has a ready-made audience, and then algorithm kind of matches people up and off you go. So I do it because I like doing it and because I've always been interested in things. And so often if I'm interested in something, who am I going to talk to? I'm a pastor. Nobody in my church wants to talk about this stuff. So what am I going to do? So this way, you know, it's how the internet works. You find other people that are interested in what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. So why was it Peterson that first kicked this off? Like, why was he a character that was like enough of a boot for you to go start talking about the stuff? Cause there's obviously other, you know, there's tons of political things going on and other characters in the States.
I consider myself a religious believer and a political skeptic because I don't really have a lot of faith that politics is going to do much to save the world.
It hasn't.
So I think I was reading Rod Dreher's blog and he had a thing mentioning Jordan Peterson, and okay, everybody was upset about the pronoun thing. I didn't find that terribly interesting. And then he started doing a biblical lecture. Mm. And what was interesting is that I have friends who were excellent preachers in Toronto who I knew their churches were half full or dying. And here's this guy up on stage charging 30, 40 bucks a head, hundreds of people in this theater, hundreds of thousands watching on YouTube to listen to, you know, sometimes you go a little long in the sermon and they're looking at their watch. This guy's going for 2 hours and then question and answer. And it's like, what's going on with this? And then I started reading Reddit and YouTube comments, and people are saying things like, yeah, I was a real big fan of Sam Harris, and now I kind of want to learn more about the Bible. And I had seen many, many people leave Christianity and go down the road of new atheism, go down the road of sort of quasi new age-ish stuff, and very seldom come back.
Right.
And behind Jordan Peterson was a list of people coming back down those same roads. And I said, this is important. So then I thought, well, he's probably some evangelical that's just sort of been in University of Toronto for a few years. And so I listened to the thing. It's like, he's not an evangelical at all. And I didn't know anything about Jung. I didn't know anything about anything. And I listened to this and it's like, this is totally different. And this is, it's fairly counter narrative in terms of sort of the narrative that's going in the culture. And why is, at that point, he had about 300,000 subscribers on YouTube. And I thought, what's going on here? And like I said, I thought, shoot, this is, I would think every pastor in the US and Canada would be honed in on this guy saying, what's going on? I mean, these other movements have been eating our lunch and now it's coming back through this guy. What is he doing? I want to know what he's doing. So then I try to talk to people and people are like, I guess I heard of him, but I'm busy. I'm a pastor and I don't, you know, I'm just, they're just, you know, they're keeping their nose to the grindstone. And I thought I would think there'd be 1,000 ministers that would be looking at this saying, oh, let's study this. Nobody was. So that I had to go out and find new people to talk about it with. And then all this happened.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. It was a crazy, crazy phenomenon. So obviously that happened in Toronto and I think he's pretty popular in Canada in terms of an intellectual. I don't know if there's anyone more popular, but definitely more influential up here. He probably gets mentioned on our podcast more than anyone else. So there's something to it. And what do you make of his work after that? So he had his initial stage. He did his Genesis lectures. He really kind of hit the world with a bit of a surprise. Like people weren't expecting him to be, you know, it's hard to say pro Christianity, but pro the biblical stories. That's what he would say. He kind of took the world by surprise. Then he wrote his books, 12 Rules for Life and 12 More Rules for Life. And just as general, you know, self-help books almost, I guess. What do you make of where he's been in and how he's kind of come to prominence? And is he the same guy now as he was back then?
Yes and no. So he's been remarkably consistent if you listen very carefully to him in terms of what his interests are. So I basically see three waves in his rise. The first wave was from Bill C-16 to when he sort of retreated from the stage because of his illness.
Right.
The second wave was when he came back from his illness until Daily Wire. And the third wave has basically been with Daily Wire. So the first wave, he was, I think, still predominantly set as a university professor and as a clinical psychologist. His emphasis was on the individual, on saving the individual, and all he had that theme going through. He came back that second wave. He was sort of, I think, then looking more at questions of civilizational Christianity. And then that really came out in his work with the ARC conference that happened in London not very long ago. Right, so that's sort of been a switch. And he just released a video with John Vervaeke where they're back talking about sort of the psychological validation of historical religion, let's call it that. And for John, for Jordan, particularly Christianity, John Vervaeke is really trying to bridge the gap between East and West. That's really sort of where John Vervaeke has been at lately. So,
right.
And so I don't know. I got into this also partly because once I started talking to people, I realized Jordan Peterson was on this status rocket ride. I mean, he was just once January of 2018 hit and 12 Rules for Life came out and he was doing the book tours, the Kathy Newman interview, the Helen Lewis interview. I mean, it was just, it was going crazy. But I knew that I began to realize that for a lot of men, particularly young men, nihilism was a huge problem. And that the dirty little secret of new atheism is that it left a lot of nihilism in its wake. And nihilism tends to produce depression. And so what was happening was that people were sort of assuming this mechanistic worldview and got sort of trapped in all of the typical pitfalls, let's say, a young man might find himself in the contemporary world. And Jordan Peterson sort of snapped them out of it. And mm-hmm. So people who had been depressed, they were having all kinds of problems. They listened to about 50 hours of Jordan Peterson because they couldn't stop and they weren't depressed anymore. And then they started getting jobs and they started marrying their girlfriends and they started moving out of their mother's basements. And they were off in life. And they were doing that in a way that the church hadn't been doing it. And that was important to me, too, because a big part of my motivation to listen very carefully to Jordan Peterson was I want to learn how he's doing what he's doing, because if I can learn how he's doing what he's doing, maybe I can do some of it, too.
Right.
But I still am probably more in his mission from wave one, which is, you know, I also knew that once people stopped listening to Jordan Peterson, once he sort of became map territory, they need a place to go and they need a community to be with. And so I wanted people to go to church. But then I also began by talking to people, realizing just how hard that was for a lot of people, that churches were having completely different conversations. Churches were focusing on very different things that were not intelligible to a lot of these people.
Right.
And not all churches were terribly excited to have these people.
Right.
Like if they tended to be mainline, more progressive churches, someone, especially after Jordan Peterson sort of gets painted as an alt-right guy, then you come into, let's say, a United Church of Canada church, you say, I like Jordan Peterson. They're going to say, you know, get behind me, Satan. So I knew church was going to be a real big problem with a lot of these people.
Right. Yeah.
And so then, well, what are you going to do? Leave them abandoned? I mean, come on. So the Orthodox Church has definitely picked up a bunch. The Catholics have picked up a bunch, but Protestant churches, some Reformed churches have sort of shown some interest, but you know, the church has got to do better.
Yeah. The inclination of a church is more likely skeptical to the entire spectrum of everything in the world. So
yep,
there's probably something to learn there. Yeah, I've heard. So one thing that comes to mind in the past on your show, I've heard you explain Peterson as I had it written down here. Let me see if I can find it. In Mark 9, Jesus is talking to his disciples. Well, John says to him, teacher, we saw someone cast out demons in your name and we tried to stop him because he was not following us. But Jesus said, do not stop him, for no one who does a mighty work in my name will be able soon afterward to speak evil of me. And then probably a well-known verse, for no one who the one who is not against us is for us.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was interesting that, so is it how you view Peterson as somebody who's like, so he's not quite a disciple, but he's definitely not somebody who's like his impact is clearly positive.
Yeah.
And so Yeah. In the church, I think there's like, there's always you want to kind of find what's wrong and then, you know, see if there's a way to solve what's wrong with Peterson or wrong with anybody, any thinker, instead of taking them for what they're worth. And then kind of like what you're describing is like the people who were influenced by them kind of taking them by the hand afterward and having understood Peterson, say, taking those people and saying, hey, this is actually where he's wrong, but welcome to our church. Yep. What have you made of, like, I'm kind of curious as how you came up with that, as like that, kind of portrayal of him.
Well, nihilism is sort of like demonic possession for these guys that had them bound, and Peterson freed them of it with YouTube videos. I mean, that's just a crazy thing. And then his stance with respect to the church, it's changed quite a bit. So yeah. I could go back to some of the early videos. You know, he had this video about lying pastors. Well, why don't you like to go to church? Well, because I don't really know that the preachers believe what they're saying. Wow, that's pretty dramatic. And now I think he's spending more time with politicians, which I think they lie more even than preachers in terms of his definition of lying. So I people kept trying to categorize him. And the more I thought about it, I thought, he's the unauthorized exorcist of the Gospel of Mark. That's how he is. And he's liberating people, but he's getting closer. Now, his wife is in the process of becoming Roman Catholic. His daughter goes to evangelical churches. I think he's going to continue to sort of stand off for a variety of reasons. I think ostensibly he'll say things like, well, and he's right. If he would pick a church, then suddenly things would get weird. And I totally understand that. But he's, I think, increasingly of a mind that churches are important.
Yeah. And he said that. Do you think he believes that they're important enough to put aside the, because again, like if he were to do that or go to church or even the way he talks about belief in God, like if he were to actually take maybe even say what he believes.
Say what he believes. He's always saying what he believes. And to the video I just did this morning, which is on 4 minutes of conversation with Vivek. He took me an hour and a half to sort of unpack. Says very clearly what he believes. He just doesn't adopt the Christian formulas and identify with them.
Right. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I'm pastor of a confessional church. You stand up, you say the Apostles' Creed. He doesn't do that.
Yeah. So he would say like belief is, well, he questions it. Like, was belief what you say or what you act? Well, and as a Reformed Christian, you're like, yeah, good point, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing is like, yeah, we would stand up and we would say the Apostles' Creed, I believe in God, but we don't have a problem saying that. We do recognize we fall short, and he would acknowledge the same thing.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he view belief like that? Like, why wouldn't he say, well, I do believe, but I fall short? Like, why does he make that distinction?
He's said similar things like that before. Part of it is just temperament it's temperament for how he is. He doesn't like being boxed in.
Because of his status? Like,
no, he's always been that way from the best tell. It's he is.
He kind of has been from the beginning, but
yeah.
Part of me can't help but think like he knows that his impact will be lessened if he were to say it. Recently on Piers Morgan, he got awfully close to saying like, yeah, I believe in God.
Yeah.
I think he's getting closer and closer, but I think he also might just be getting pushed more and more.
I think I often tell people becoming a Christian is not like buying a reasonable used car. You don't just sit down and, you know, do the pros and cons. It's much more like falling in love. I mean, if you picked your wife because you sat down and said, well, you know, these are some good things or these are some bad things, I think she's a reasonable choice. most women would say, I don't want to be your reasonable choice.
Maybe that's
I
want to
be the love of your life.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's fair.
So I think whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I'm comfortable to leave it in God's hands.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's just a very interesting perspective to think from the church side about how, like, that's one of the hangups people have. It's like, well, why won't he just say this? I'm trying to think of that from a outsider perspective, though. Like, I don't know that that really matters per se. Like, they still get a lot of the, I don't say value, but they get a lot of good instruction from him, right? Being the unauthorized exorcist.
Yeah. I don't know that what he offers is necessarily so much instruction. I think he tends to inspire more than instruct.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, there's a real devotion when you go to one of his live events, which, you know, there's a real devotion to him. And so I think
he definitely start a cult.
Yeah. You know, you just have to ask to what degree does he have a cult already, but he's not sleeping with groupies or anything like that. So I'd pass on the C word for now, but there's a clear devotion to him personally in the world. And it's very dramatic, and it hasn't. I remember I was talking to a Canadian academic early on who had done some, I thought, really good analysis of his work. And he basically thought, yeah, a year or two, this is going to pass, because every 5 or 10 years, there was a Jungian who would sort of rise in popular, get popular. And sometimes Jungian Christians would sort of get popular and then they would just sort of trail off. And he thought, yeah, this is what will happen to Jordan. And I thought, well, I don't know. And it hasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he even acknowledged that early on, too. He was like, well, I kind of thought this was my 5 minutes in the sun, but it hasn't gone away. And there's obviously something deeper there. Yeah, whenever he got challenged by a journalist, he's like, well, clearly I'm saying something useful because, like, I'm still around. So, hello.
Yeah.
Which is it's just a fair point. I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of curious about when he gets to Daily Wire. What do you make of what he's become now? I find like just taking a character like this and forcing him to put content out all the time, it seems like he's turned into a bit of a different animal.
Yeah. I think what Daily Wire offered him was a platform that he himself didn't have to manage.
Yeah.
And before then, he was managing his platform. You know, his daughter sort of runs his business. And you know, they had some videographers and editors, and they had some people who were sort of doing that stuff, but he had to sort of run it. I think Daily Wire sort of allowed him to say, okay, all of this stuff is going to be over here. If YouTube cancels me, if Twitter cancels me, at least I still have something with Daily Wire. And I think he wanted that and liked that. And I'm sure he got a lot of money for it. Maybe not as much as if he had stayed independent. I don't know. It would all depend on whether or not YouTube was going to cancel him or not.
Right.
But I think it did. I think it did sort of. It did sort of reinforce what the political left had tried to buttonhole him and characterize him. Oh, he's just another conservative pundit along with, Ben Shapiro, yada, yada, yada. And so I think in that way, Daily Wire didn't help him remain broadly accessible to sort of the left and the right, which is how it was in 2018 and 2017. He had a far broader audience listening to him then than he does now. His audience is narrower now, more focused. Daily Wire, we should say something about Daily Wire, because I now have some relationships, not with anybody that people see on YouTube on Daily Wire, but with some other people that are sort of behind the scenes. It's an interesting outfit, and it's stranger than people would assume it is on a number of fronts. Part of what's difficult for a lot of people who are just sort of locked into the mainstream narrative, you know, there are a lot of conservative gay men around. And people don't, it's like the conservative black intellectual. People don't know what to do with these people because a conservative black intellectual, conservative gay man, conservative married gay man. Yeah, they're out there. And so, you know, and, you know, some of them work at Daily Wire. And when you look at sort of the thumbnail of who Daily Wire is supposed to be, then you get a little bit higher resolution. It's like, like a guy like Dave Rubin, who's, you know, just sort of a political pundit, conservative political pundit out there who's a married gay man. It's like, oh, what's with that? That's part of what identity culture does, though. Because if you're a conservative black intellectual or a conservative gay man, you've got a ready-made audience because you're not supposed to exist. So your platform is just going to rise. That's why I tell people, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Trump, but if Trump somehow doesn't get the Republican nomination, you know, someone like Nikki Haley, the first woman president of the United States will probably be a Republican for those same dynamics. And it's just going to gall a whole bunch of people. But, you know, look at Margaret Thatcher. Yeah. It's the way identity politics works. If you reinforce it, you're going to see its inverse rise.
Yeah. And I mean, you saw that with, like, I'm even thinking like Douglas Murray's very, very popular. I mean, yeah, he's a gay man. Like, you're already going to garner some kind of listenership just from being that character. I think even like, I don't know where he's at now, but like a guy like Milo
Yiannopoulos,
who's like probably the most infamous / famous like character like that, who's now possibly a Christian, but
conservative Catholic.
Yeah, very interesting.
So renouncing gay sex.
Right. Yeah. And like, but he would admit in his heyday back in the day, I don't know if he's still in his heyday or not, that he has a voice basically just for being so outrageous.
Exactly.
And that was like, to your point, which is very interesting. And because he was on the conservative end of things.
Yeah.
Do people like latch on to something like that? Because, because the character's like, not someone like, they want, but someone that they can use. Like,
it's like yelling, "You're a Nazi" at Ben Shapiro with his yarmulke on. It's he's a Nazi. No, it's like saying, okay, yeah, Doug Murray is a homophobe. It's like, they can't really, you know, and it's that dissonance that captures people's attention. So
is that like, do you find that Christians attach to these people a little bit or try to at least have a hope that they do good in the world because of, I mean, I find myself watching like what Milo Yiannopoulos was doing and saying like, at least somebody's going to do it. And this is a guy that they can hardly cancel. I mean, they figured out a way, but it's something that's like, if you can have a positive impact, I almost don't care who you are, for better or worse, I guess.
I think the best way to think about it is, I did some videos on this a while ago. There's a guy named Chris Green. He's a pastor in a charismatic Episcopal church in Texas. So really, you think about all those things together. And when it comes to figuring this out, it's sort of like the good bad man in Westerns. So the classic treatment of this was The Man Who Killed Liberty Valance, a 1950s classical Western that had Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne. Jimmy Stewart rides into town. He's got a law degree. He's straight as an arrow. He's got a lot of character. He's very principled. And then there's the John Wayne character who is practical, pragmatic. And then there's a guy named Liberty Valance who is just tearing up the town because he's a bad man. Jimmy Stewart can't handle the bad man. John Wayne's going to kill him.
Right.
And I think that's actually the best way to understand Donald Trump and evangelicals, because they look at the system and they say, this system isn't right. All of our attempts to sort of vote up principled good men have failed. We need a bad man who's going to destroy our enemies. Now, I think Christians have to really pause and think about that narrative, because that narrative isn't terribly different from, let's say, the narrative of Barabbas. So you have the Jews and they're under the oppression of the Romans, and the Pharisees are doing their culture war thing. You know, they're not eating, you know, they're not eating unclean things. They're marking the Sabbath. They're doing all of these ways to try to differentiate themselves from Hellenism. And every now and then a Jewish strongman arises and promises, if you follow me, I'll take out the Romans. And then we'll let you Pharisees be in charge. And Jesus doesn't do that. Mm. I mean, Jesus goes to the cross. I mean, and it failed revolutionaries got crucified. Right. And this is, you know, when I talk to some of my Jewish friends, this is part of the big problem with Jesus, is they say Messiahs are like David overthrowing the Philistines, or Judas, you know, Maccabees overthrowing the Greeks. Messiahs are like Simon Bar Kokhba, who tried to overthrow the Romans, or like Barabbas. And the crowd wants Barabbas. And Jesus says, I'm going to play a very different game. I'm going to conquer Rome, but my conquest of Rome is not going to be anything like you think it is. Christians sort of fall into that narrative sometimes because they think it's expedient. Right. But over the long run, you're sort of giving in to the devil's game, because you say, what finally matters is the sword. And Jesus says, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. So Christians have to really be a lot more savvy with this stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good thought. I mean, even the, it brings me back to like the trucker convoy up here in Canada. Like you say, it's similar to Trump too, right? You can get on the bandwagon because you want people to, you want somebody strong, even if he's not really going to do what's good, just to bring about a world that you think is better. I think that's kind of where the conservative movement is at, right? Like more broadly, I mean, I don't know how much there is wrong with the way the trucker convoy was done up here. I think for the most part it was overblown, but I mean, that's kind of in the same vein. It's like taking it upon yourself. It's not really an evil thing to do. It was a peaceful protest. I'm sure that's a very nice buzzword for the States, but it's just like, can we use the, or can we cheer on the world's conservatives who, you know, they're not really doing good. They're just doing evil for good ends, I guess.
Think of during the American Civil Rights Movement, you had Martin Luther King, you had Malcolm X, you had the Black Panthers. Part of the reason Dr. Martin Luther King won was because people said, well, with Malcolm X, we know what we're getting. With the Black Panthers, we know what we're getting. We'd rather have King. And of course, King dies in the movement, which actually helps the movement. Because, you know, if he had continued his critique of the Vietnam War, you know, who knows how that would have impacted legislation. People looking back at the early 1960s from today, people don't realize that the 60s really didn't start until like 68.
Right.
In other words, most of the 60s were kind of a continuation of the 50s.
Right. So, that's really interesting. It's definitely, it makes you think about how you would, how you react to these social issues. I mean, even something like as crazy as would be like a civil war or something, what you do as a conservative, or as a Christian. I guess it kind of ties back into the idea of voting for a party that doesn't necessarily align with Christian values, but is the better of two evils, I guess. And you're kind of in that position. You got like a two-party
system. That's every American candidate. That's every American presidential campaign.
Yeah. And here we have this. I mean, we have a terrible political system up here, but it's, you don't vote for the person, you vote for the party, basically. And
yeah,
the party's not necessarily good, even though the person you might have, you know, quote unquote, represent you is good. But yeah, that's super interesting. The one other person that comes to mind in this situation is with this idea in our minds is like Andrew Tate, one of those guys who's fighting this, like, yeah, he's fighting something in the world that Christians can definitely appreciate, but clearly is a lunatic. So what do you make of him, and what Christians should think of him?
I don't know a lot about Andrew Tate. Most That's of good. What I know is he's a pimp. And
that's what they say.
I don't have any respect for pimps because of how they treat women. That's for me, that's just kind of done. You know, if you treat women like that, I don't have any respect for you. You're a pimp. And I think pimps are cowards. And I think pimps use women, you know, and it's just, he's a pimp. That's what he is.
Yeah. That's what, yeah. I mean, I don't know a ton about him. But he's obviously like captured people in the conservative side of the thing, the conservative movement, in that like he's just fighting for men, I guess, in our society, and not having all this, you know, not willing to engage with this debate on, you know, what a man's role is and all whatever. Like, is there?
You know, I like actually this morning I was just on a live stream with some friends because that's kind of what we do. And one guy was talking about his father, who was a steel worker, kind of a hard man, flawed man in many ways, but had a good heart. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think men whine and complain about their lot. I think that's part of masculinity. You know, we know life is hard. We know things are difficult. We know sometimes things aren't fair, but you know what? You deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And in a sense, the men's rights movement can degenerate into, even though they've got a lot of great points, it can degenerate into a bunch of whining, which is, I think, part of the reason why it'll never become what the women's movement is. Because we're men.
Yeah. I know, regardless of what people want to think. That's true.
I mean, a group of guys, you know, there's this part of the Barbie movie when, oh, it's so hard to be a woman. And it's like, yeah, you're right. It is hard to be a woman. You know what? It's hard to be a man too. Different ways, but life is hard. So if life is hard, then it's hard to be a man and it's hard to be a woman. But, you know, men don't tend to get around and say, you know, we had it rough. You know, it's so hard to be a man. Well, what's your alternative, buddy? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just be a man, okay?
It's true. Yeah, that's a very Peterson-esque answer. So that's good. Yeah. Man, there's so much here. I wanted to ask you about, this is going back to Peterson a little bit, but this is kind of been on my mind for the last little bit, with intellectuals. I mean, you see it a lot of times in atheist people in the conservative movement, but you've talked about this on your show too, like, or various commentaries you've done on videos, the sleight of hand that they do with evolution and what to think about this as a Christian, because a lot of times what I noticed Peterson doing it quite often, where he, I mean, his lobster thing is probably the most common example. Basically they'll see a report and explain it using evolutionary theory. And then, basically take that theory that they've come up with as to why this is the way it is, and then use that to explain the world. Like, so yeah, Peterson does it with the lobsters. Like, hierarchies are the way they are. We can see that. Then he says, well, look at the evolutionary evidence from lobster, whatever. This is obviously where it came from. And then, you know, if you kind of walk down that road with him, he can say, well, now look at, like, this isn't bad. This is because of who we are, because of evolution. And to me, a lot of the times you don't need evolution, but the people bring evolution into it. And for some reason, it seems that it gives it more academic oomph in our world. People are like, oh, evolution, good, he used that. And then they give him the check mark for evolution use and then say, what he said must be useful now. What do we do with this as Christians? Like, like you see it all over the place. People using that that kind of sleight of hand to explain things. Is that something that should
worry? Everyone has a system of justification. You say Christians, yeah. You know, conservative Christians, Protestants do it with the Bible. I mean, if you have an idea that you can somehow tie to the Bible, you tie it to the Bible because that's how you validate and justify your idea.
Right.
And because of the shape of the modernist fundamentalist war that has been the predominant Christian civil war probably until the early 20-teens, when sort of the wokeism, you know, came up, that became sort of the predominant Christian civil war in the West. If you're looking to popularize an idea or convince somebody of your idea, you tie it to the source of justification, which for modernist people is the theory of evolution. So, and there's so much evolutionary site, you know, there's so much chatter in sort of the male wisdom space on YouTube. Evolutionary psychology, I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said, evolutionary psychology is just the new natural law for non-Christian influencers. It's basically natural law, but it's super weird because, and the same friend also pointed out to me that it's also very Gnostic, because on one hand you'll say something like, well, it's evolutionary biology tells men to sow seed as broadly as they can, to basically conquer the world like Genghis Khan. In other words, I should impregnate through rape, subjugation, harems, polygamy, any way I can. I should propagate my seed far and wide. That's the evolutionary code that's working in me. And anything that I'm trying to do is in service of that evolutionary code. Okay, but if I actually start to live it out, that out, they'll say, well, you're Andrew Tate. You're evil. I said, well, wait a minute. I'm just doing what's in line with my programming. What do you mean evil? Isn't this the success story of humanity? Isn't this how we came? Why suddenly the qualms? And that's part of the problem with the whole evolutionary psychology fixation we have now, which is, and, you know, Brett Weinstein is sort of the guy where this kind of comes together, because on one hand, he says we're all these assassin robots programmed to act like Genghis Khan, but we should deny our programming. And then it's like, now, wait a minute. I'm working on a Windows computer here. I'm just going to tell my Windows computer to deny its programming? If the moment my Windows computer denies its programming, the screens go black and it just crashes. I've had computers crash. I mean, I've used Windows for a long time. It used to crash all the time. So, you know, it's finally incoherent.
Yeah.
And I think the longer we go with this current fascination, the more and more incoherent. And that's actually part of what the woke wars is about. Because wokeism basically, on one level, says, screw all theories, including the theory of evolution, and just propagate this one vision of, you know, oppressed oppressor morality, and everything else is everything else is just illusion. So,
right. Yeah, that's so interesting. Will there be a different thing that people, I mean, I don't know where this evolutionary thing goes. I don't see the world moving off of it. Like you described it as like using it as like, yeah, natural law, like what we would say, like your inalienable rights, right? Like, do you see that ever going away? Or do you see that that's kind of going to be what we see the rest of our lifetime, at least?
Well, there's some people out there like James Tour and Stephen Meyer who are out there saying, you know, there's some of these dynamics that Darwin pointed to might have worked really well with finches, but it really can't account for actually the origins of life. Right. You know, you might get finches and, you know, you might get variations within species, but did he really actually demonstrate the differentiation of species? And so, you know, those more nerdy conversations are going to continue in the background. But as with almost everything with respect to science now, it's not really science that people are doing. Science has just become a word that people use to pass their checks, because that's the word that we use to pass checks. Just like, again, in a church, you say, well, here's a Bible verse that backs me. The thing is, if you're around enough church fights, you know that everybody's coming to the battle with a Bible verse. And so it's,
unless
it's
you're Anthony Fauci, then you are science. Unless you're Anthony Fauci, then you know what's what.
Yeah, Covine destroyed Anthony Fauci's career. At least he was an old man already. So
yeah. Oh, that's so true. Yeah, it's just curious that like a guy like Peterson would go back to that, because he talks about like the biblical stories or something, or even psychology of, or some relationships or something like that, to a deep level. And then he roots it in what I think he believes. I mean, I do think he believes in evolution, even the origin story and whatever, billions of years ago. But I think he also believes that as an academic, because that's been like what you said, that's like the accepted, it's our accepted, academia has accepted that as like our natural law. And so if he can root that, it gives him some kind of clout, I guess, in the conversation. And so that's why it's always worried me. But yeah, it does make sense that like, we're never going to necessarily get away from that. And yeah, I mean, your comments are very helpful. Like it just doesn't make sense to give it any kind of, it doesn't explain origins, obviously. And
part of it is the kind of explanation we're demanding. Now, if you read Genesis 1, let the earth bring forth. That's what Genesis 1 says. All right, what does that mean? God commands, let the earth bring forth. It doesn't tell you anything about it. And so obviously people are going to want to know what, you know, sort of the efficient cause of all of the kind of life that we see around us is. So
that people are going to stop till they know exactly, but that ain't going to happen.
Is it that God said something and poof, there was something? The Bible gives you a story, and the Bible gives you a theological story and says, God made the world. And what's underneath sort of the biological story that's got supremacy right now is a theological wish, which is, there is no purpose for people.
Right.
You are And if there is no purpose for people, you are free to become what you want to become, anything you want to become. And part of what we're seeing now is that sort of being played out in the world. And, you know, I can decide at 60 years old, 6'4", 240 pounds, that I want to be a ballerina. And I can wish that all I want. You know what? It ain't going to happen. And I could, you know, maybe if I was a billionaire, I could buy a theater and I could wear a tutu and I could prance on stage and I could even pay people to come and applaud me. Still wouldn't make me a ballerina.
Right.
So there are constraints on this world. There's constraints on life. And part of what Peterson introduced or reintroduced to an audience that had very much believed we're just the products of physics and randomness. No, there is purpose in the universe. And that's the essential disagreement with nihilism, that you are made for something. And it's, and so therefore, don't waste your life.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me. If I take his argument down to the core, especially in his Genesis lectures, where he starts, where he introduces the idea of God into right. that, you know, what he would say from a psychological perspective, to me, it butts up against evolution, because he can't draw a line between, like, okay, we were evolving out of this process of natural selection, like what you described, like just raw materialism, naturalism. And then all of a sudden now we have what he would say. Now we have story. We have, obviously there's a transcendent. And now, so when does that get introduced? It just doesn't, I don't know that Peterson's really unpacked it enough. I don't think he's, but I just don't think that there's a desire to, and that's what kind of bothers me about a lot of the conservative movement, is they're okay. As long as they can connect what they're trying to say, which is like, yeah, there's more to life than, you know, we're all just floating around. You can't be whatever you want to be, because there's obviously meaning to life. And a lot of this meaning crisis stuff kind of, it just doesn't jive with evolutionary naturalism that you basically see. And then, but if they don't tie it to that, then they're intellectually, for some reason, they're intellectually not worth listening to in this world. So it's very strange. It's just,
there's the B level celebrity atheists. I mean, a lot of them have really not liked Jordan Peterson, and they've not liked him because they've seen that he's basically been raiding their storehouse of followers. And there's a guy named Rationality Rules, Stephen Woodford from the UK. And he got it from another guy named Destiny, with purple hair. And they basically recognize that what Peterson does is Peterson gives people like all of the steps to get there. And people just follow Peterson up the steps. And the last step, which is basically, okay, well, then therefore purpose is built into the universe, and therefore I have a purpose, and therefore, you know, Peterson takes him all the way to the edge, and then Peterson stops, and people just keep walking, taking the next step. And that's exactly what's been happening.
Right. And yeah.
So Peterson's given them the stairway, and they just finish the walk. And so then, now, where is Peterson with respect to that? Who's to say? I mean, part of what holds Jordan, and he says it all the time, he says, I am a scientist. And I think he's right. I mean, he's had an enormous number of published journal entries. And I think part of the point is, science can bring you to that line, but science will not step over that line. Because that's science. Science is, I call it, scientism is basically a science lab leak. And basically science says, you know, go up on that Italian tower with Galileo with those spheres of different sizes and drop them together. There's science. And so the earlier natural philosophers would say things like, God is astoundingly reliable because God doesn't sort of interfere with those balls. And all of us would say today, no, God doesn't interfere with those balls. He doesn't interfere with shells falling in war. He doesn't interfere with bullets, with knives, with flames, with all kinds of things that do us damage. God doesn't interfere with those things. And science just measures those things. But science will only get you so far. And so part of the reason Jordan stays here is he keeps saying, I'm speaking about this technically or as, you know, psychologically speaking. He just keeps pointing out that line and saying, here's this line. And I'm going to go all the way to this line. And I'm going to stay at this line when I'm speaking. And then when someone really presses him, but what do you believe? He'll say, that's private. Now, what do you mean that's private? That's private. I know a story of there was a celebrity and his wife who were dining in a restaurant. And Jordan came in with some other people, and these celebrities were Christians. And the celebrity on the way out, these celebrities from the 80s, you'd recognize them, or I'd recognize them because I'm old. And Jordan recognized them because he's the same age as me. And so they're chatting, and these celebrities were Christians. And so I think the woman leaned into him and basically said, now, come on, Jordan, what do you really believe? He basically said, that's private. So bang, right there. That's what he does. Yeah. And he's done that consistently.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning. He hasn't wavered from that. So, and actually it's a super smart marketing campaign because there are all kinds of YouTube channels that have made a buttload of money, you know, right on that line with Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson finally shows he's a Christian. The internet goes crazy.
Yeah. Which is, yeah. It's and I mean, I don't know how important it is. It's just something to think about as a Christian that you're like, you follow this guy, but yeah, at some point he stops and we, you know, keep going. And we have a belief. Yeah. My one annoyance always is how he describes belief, but I mean, we kind of talked about that. It's just like
he talks about it psychologically, and belief psychologically is a very complex thing.
Yeah.
In church, we treat it like a simple thing, but psychologically, it's super complex. And I think actually in church, we've long time known it's complex because, you know, the Christian minister that sleeps with the organist, his defense at his trial getting kicked out of church is never, I believe in all the right things. That doesn't matter. Still slept with the organist. You're out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's how it works.
So, but there is something in the scripture that, like, we're supposed to have a childlike faith, and Peterson would, like, I don't know what he would say to that. I'm sure he'd have a way of explaining it away.
Well, but when, like, he starts doing his gospel series, we'll find out what he says about it.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. I haven't actually listened through his Exodus series yet, all the way through, but I'm sure you have. Have you covered that on your show?
I covered it for a while. See, it's behind the Daily Wire paywall. And so I got permission to do like 10 minutes of clips an episode, but they're 2-hour episodes. And I found because my goal is not primarily to create content for YouTube, I found that process to be a lot less fun than treating things that I can sort of freely treat on the internet.
Right. Yeah.
So I stopped.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
It wasn't a much. I mean, again, I, for the most part, I tell people I'm a very selfish YouTuber. I make videos I want to make. And then people
it makes you authentic though, which is what makes it worth listening to. So,
then some people they'll leave a comment. I don't want to hear anything more about Jordan Peterson. Then unsubscribe. You know, I don't care. Go away. There's plenty of internet where you hear nothing of Jordan Peterson, I'm not going to stop making videos about what I'm interested in because you don't want to watch it. I'm not here to make videos you want to watch. I'm here to make videos I want to make. Yeah. Well, there it is. Well, sorry.
Well, that's great. What do you make of the, just out of curiosity, of the DW crowd, Daily Wire, because that's probably one of the more popular subscriptions, I would say, as in terms of conservative media that like Canadians would go to, especially they're obviously starting to do the kids content thing. They're creating a lot of like yeah, what I mean, I don't know anyone else is creating more decent stuff. There probably are some, but not in terms of like a media, like conglomerate type. Would you recommend that people go there?
I'll only recommend what I watch myself, and the only stuff I watch on Daily Wire are Jordan Peterson and Jonathan Pigeau. Okay. I'm not interested in the rest of it. To me, the rest of it is so predictable. Okay, yeah. you're gonna beat on Biden. All right, this is that holds no interest to me. You know,
never get into like the politics side. Eh? Like, you're not interested in politics.
Well, I am interested in politics, but when it's I'm interested in politics that's less predictable.
Yeah, right.
And you know, okay, you don't like this party or this president. All right, well, that's what I need to know. I don't need to spend 20 hours hearing why you don't like him. You just don't like him. All right, that's fine. I'll move on. I thought there were portions of What Is a Woman that were clever. I started, because I have this subscription, because I want to know what's in the last half hour of Peterson's things, and I wanted to watch Jonathan Pigeau's thing. But then there was this other, you know, and they're putting more and more stuff up top, so I have to keep scrolling through it to get the stuff I want to see. And I clicked on one other thing about basketball or something, and I watched a little of it, and the acting was meh, and the writing was meh. I watched 15 minutes of it and thought, I'm not going to watch anymore. I'm just going to keep, watch what I want. So until...
You know what it is pretty quick.
What?
Well, you know what, like, you know what they're creating, right? Like the
political.
And then, yeah, I find a lot of their shows, like, I mean, all the characters they have are all commenting on the same thing in their own way. And
I get a lot of recommendations from the people that watch my videos, because it's sort of the same logic behind the YouTube algorithm. If someone that tends to like the same kinds of things I like recommends something, chances are I might like it. So a lot of what I watch now comes from my audience, because they said, oh, you should watch this. And then I go there. I was like, oh, that is good. And so my YouTube audience is sort of becoming my algorithm for what I watch.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful. Not everyone has that.
No, it's a really cool thing. It's a real, real perk and bonus for having a YouTube channel.
Yeah. Well, I find your YouTube channel to be a fairly decent way to consume content, because it's kind of already curated. Like, this is the stuff that's important, and I don't have to listen to necessarily, like, if I don't catch every Peterson interview, I just hit your commentary on it and I get the, you know, this was good, this was terrible, whatever. Well, at least I know. Which is fairly helpful. So how would you
recommend that? That's why I like the other channels that have sort of popped out, because I use those other channels in exactly the same way. Right, if Chad or Grizz or Paul or Sam or one of these other people covered it, well, then I know to pay attention to it, because we're all in the same conversation. And where not just say outsourcing our cognition to an algorithm, but actually having connections with real human beings that are in sort of the same thing is super helpful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So what do you, I'm curious. I mean, we've asked this question a bunch on our podcast, like, just the media space is obviously it's tough. And like, putting more effort into consuming what you consume is probably the right answer. But what would you recommend that people do? Like, how important is it for Christians to pay attention to what you're paying attention to? Like these high level conversations on the conservative side of things. I guess politics is a little bit more your interest based stuff, but like, you're touching on a lot of like ideological argumentation in the, you know, whatever, the dark web side of the world.
Politics is the natural gas to my petroleum. You know, it used to be that they used to just burn off the natural gas. And then suddenly somebody said, you know, if we sort of pipe this up and run it to households, you could probably heat households and run electrical generators with this stuff. And so that's where natural gas got it going. So I'm a religious believer and a political skeptic. So I'm not terribly wedded to political outcomes because I've been living long enough. I mean, what people believe is conservative continues to change. So I don't know. I people who aren't all on the internet now, I wouldn't tell them to get on. My people at church who don't watch my stuff on YouTube, I don't tell them to watch my stuff on YouTube. I tell them to read the Bible and pay attention to their kids and, you know, live a Christian life. That's what they should do. Now, if you're already on the internet, well, now you have to figure out how you're going to handle that monster. And then you're going to have to make some decisions about what you're filling your brain with.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think, once you get the young ages, I think that's pretty inevitable. So,
yeah, and if you're, one of the things I noticed right away when I started the channel were a lot of coders were watching my stuff because coders had, you can only listen to so much music. So then you look for other sort of, if your job is sort of repetitive, and then there's also, you know, tilers, painters, plumbers, you know, people who work the trades. You know, back in the 80s when I was delivering lumber, you know, they'd have AM radio on. They'd listen to Howard Stern or Don Imus or, you know, these kind of things.
Oh, yeah, Rush Limbaugh.
And now via YouTube, you're not sort of beholden to radio and TV stations. You can kind of go out there and narrowcast to whatever your interests are. And that's sort of where a channel like mine finds its audience.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Great. Yeah. Man, well, I could talk to you all day about these characters and stuff, but I was going to ask you about the GOP primary because we're pretty detached from it. And I know you're not political, but you must pay attention to, you know, the ideas that are floating around at least.
My dream for the 2024 election is that we have a different choice than we had in 2020. I don't want to sit there with Biden and Trump again. I am so tired of that. I'd almost, you know, a different Republican and a different Democrat, hopefully 20 to 30 years younger than both of these guys. But I don't know that, you know, I mean, we're in a race between a guy who's probably going to go to jail and a guy who's probably just not going to be able to live through his term. You know, that's our race that we're in. It's extremely depressing.
That is pretty depressing. Yeah. It's not good for a country your size.
No, it's not good for your country either.
No, it really isn't. I mean, there's not much good going for our country, what we got going on. So, it's a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah.
But, All right. Well, I shouldn't take up your whole day, but I got one other question I wanted to ask you about Elon Musk.
Okay.
What do you make of that guy? What he's done with X, Twitter, where he's been. I mean, I know, like, even since I wrote up this outline the guy comes up in like 10 news stories a day. So he's always saying something. What do you make out of him as a character? Like, do you see him as doing, you know, good in the world? Or some people look to him to, you know, help save the world, but he's also trying to put us on Mars. So
I don't think we're getting to Mars anytime soon.
I agree.
I think what he's done with Tesla is interesting. I haven't seen that. So part of what we're constantly fed is that my life will be either tremendously improved or absolutely destroyed based on who the next president is going to be. Now, there's a possibility of that if there's a complete economic collapse or a war or something like that. But for the most part, it's just not true. And Elon Musk is an interesting guy who is obviously very smart. I mean, what he's done with building Tesla is impressive. What he's done with SpaceX, the little I know of it, seems impressive. What he's done with, a satellite internet service. So that's interesting. So, you know, good for him. He bought Twitter. I don't find Twitter to be a the way I use it, I don't find it to be an extraordinarily different place than it was before. I'm glad that Jordan Peterson's back onto it, but you know, and Jordan Peterson has, you know, he's sort of tempered himself on Twitter again, which is probably, you know, he himself described what he used to do. You know, the guy works like a horse. So he spends all day, he's traveling, he's doing interviews, and then he does he's on stage for 2 hours, and then he's doing the VIP meet and greets after those for another couple of hours. And then it's just like the rock star. It's about, you know, it's 12 or 1. And in order to fall asleep, you got to kind of, when you're on stage, it's all adrenaline. Your body needs time to sort of settle down. And, you know, that's where a lot of young rock stars get into trouble with drugs and alcohol, because they start taking, you know, Elvis, they start taking drugs and alcohol to put them up and then to bring them down. Well, a lot of people just kind of sit down and start to relax. And those hours, then you're reading Twitter. And then you're seeing this or that. Ooh, retweet this. Ooh, respond to this. And you're just going to get yourself in trouble a lot of times. So I think he's tempered himself in that. But people like, I'm not going to buy a Tesla because of Elon Musk. What, you're going to buy a Ford? Read a biography of Henry Ford someday. Come on, people, buy a Tesla because you want to buy a Tesla, or you think it'll work out well for you. People spend too much time looking at these individuals. Elon Musk is Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He's just another guy.
Yeah. It's definitely not somebody. There's definitely nobody to just, you know, look at and be like, oh, this is the guy. I mean, if there was, Peterson might have been him. You know, Tucker Carlson might have been him. People thought Rush Limbaugh was him. So there's a lot of, at some point you have to throw your hands in the air and say, well, we just need to read our Bibles and stop thinking that these guys will be the new savior of our world.
No, Christians have a savior already, and his name is Jesus. And why don't you stick with Jesus? I'm a minister. What am I supposed to say? Of course, that's what I believe. That's why, you know, what's your goal? I don't know. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. How about those for goals?
Yeah.
Well, that's not original to you. No, it isn't. What do you want from me? I'm not your savior. Love Jesus. He's your savior.
Yep. Oh, man, that's probably a good place to leave it. I don't know if you have any other advice for people, but I mean, I'm sure if they want some, they can go to your channel and hear.
Yeah, I try not to give advice. People don't listen anyway. So people are going to do what they want. You learn that as a pastor. Pastor, tell me what I should do. Why? You're not going to do it anyway. No, really, I will. What did I tell you last time? Did you do it? No. So what? When you do that, come back and maybe I'll think about giving you more advice.
Right. Yeah. Oh man, that's it. Hey, this has been, it's been pretty enlightening. It's good to hear your perspective on these things. So really, really appreciate it.
It's always fun to talk.
I would encourage everyone to go, look you up, Paul Vander Clay with a K. It'll be all over, plastered all over our, social media and stuff like that. And, I appreciate your time and,
all right, no problem.
All the best with your work.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Real Talk. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen or watch the show. If you want to send us your feedback, and we'd love to hear it, please email us at reformedrealtalk@gmail.com. If you want to find us online or social media, we got a lot of great content there. Just search Reformed Real Talk and we should come right up. This show is created and produced by myself, Lucas Holtfluer, and Tyler Vanderwood, and our wonderful podcast manager who does all the editing is Mariah Tamaga. So we're really thankful for her contribution to the show as well. That's all for now, folks. Thanks for watching or listening, and we'll catch you next time.